Hi, Scalable Investors. Today I have with me Neil Bawa. Neil is the founder and CEO of Grow Capitus, a commercial real estate investing firm that's invested in over 2,000 doors and over $50 million in both multifamily and self-storage properties. And he's also the CEO of Multifamily U, which is an apartment investing education company. So really excited to have you on, Neil. How are things going today?
Good, good. Just wanted to point out, it's not 50 million, it's 250 million.
250. Got it. Rounding error. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on the show. I'm very excited to be here.
Sure. Yeah, I was actually questioning, the 50 million seemed a little low given the volume that you've done. So makes a lot of sense now. All right. Well, for our listeners that maybe you're not as familiar with you, at first I am, and I feel like you're a large mover and shaker in the commercial real estate space, but how about you just give us a little brief background of how you got involved in real estate and where you are today? How'd you get there?
Sure. I am a data geek, a data scientist that accidentally fell into real estate through my day job, which, as you can imagine, was in technology. And I was running a company, very fast growing, hundreds of employees. And my senior partner and CEO decided that we didn't want to be tenants anymore. We wanted to be our own landlords for our business. And so he, out of the blue, said, oh, in addition to running a company that grows 30% a year, we're going to build a custom campus as our flagship headquarters. And you and I are going to build it basically as general contractors. And I was like, I think, Paul, you're having one of those days. We don't know anything about real estate. We don't know the first thing. I've never rehabbed a home. I've never flipped anything. I know how to spell real estate, and that's about it. And he was like, no, I know a lot. And he did. And we're going to figure it out. And, you know, I'll mentor you. And so over the next 12 months, I screamed and yelled and kicked and moaned and bitched about every step of that process of building that campus. And I haven't stopped thanking him ever since. It's been 17 years. It was one of the most incredible learning experiences to basically start from scratch and build a $6 million campus. I find that there are syndicators that have been doing this for 20 years that don't have that knowledge because no one's ever built one from scratch. And so I had a chance to do it, and it was a magnificent experience. So sometimes these kinds of amazing things just happen in your life.
Yeah, that is definitely interesting. I think sometimes it's good to be drugged toward that thing instead of trying to just do it all on willpower.
Yeah, did especially I mention moaning, the bitching, and the complaining? Yeah, that was all there.
All right, that's good. Yeah, I think it's always good to have some sort of catalyst. So, okay. Yeah. And I think that's what's interesting about your company. It's not just doing the typical acquisition of an existing Class B or C property, but you know, identifying the right market and building a brand new property. So how do you go about that process of deciding whether or not to do that?
So that's an interesting story. So, you know, after I did that whole campus, I started looking at real estate as an opportunity because I saw the tax benefits that were coming out of that campus. I had the big fat tax salary. So I, you know, was giving 50% of my income to the IRS. And I realized, ooh, this real estate stuff seems to have some clear benefits, some incredible benefits when it comes to taxes. And so I started looking at it, and by the time I was ready, you know, 2008 had happened, and everyone was telling me that real estate was the worst place to invest in, and, you know, that I was nuts for even thinking of it. But then on the other hand, having done my math and my research, I was like Dustin Hoffman and Rain Man, who really couldn't understand anybody else, because everything that people were telling me seemed to be wrong. Because when I was looking at what was available in the marketplace and the prices and the cash flow, it was beyond a no-brainer. It was just like, this is an astonishingly good opportunity that everybody seems to hate, right? Because people were so jilted in 2008, nobody wanted to touch real estate. But it was an incredible time to buy. Obviously, in hindsight, you know, people think that. But I'm like, I've never bought a single family home. I have lots of cash sitting on the sidelines. And I'm very excited about this. And everybody, my family, my friends are telling me that I'm the biggest idiot of all time. And I think what was nice was because I'm a data scientist, I ignored all of that. And I decided I'm going to use data science to figure out the best place in America to invest in, because I was also afraid that I'm making a mistake. So I go to a Ukrainian hacker and I tell him there's this website called Zillow. I want you to spider all 3,300 websites, 3,300 pages that display 3,300 different cities on Zillow. I wanted to spider them all and send them to me as a package. And I thought he might take a month. You know, a few hours after we spoke, a beautifully designed Excel spreadsheet appears in my email with all of those 3,300 cities. And so what I did was I simply sorted the cities by, you know, price at peak and price in, you know, late 2008, December 2008. So the fall, I was looking for cities that had fallen the most because my research indicated that real estate is one of those bubbly things. When it goes up too much. When it comes down too much. Most people know about the going up part. They don't know that it also falls too much. An example, a perfect example of that is the city that had the highest decline was a 70% decline from 2005 to 2008, 70%. So homes that were selling for about $275,000 were now selling for $90,000. So the question that I had was, how much does this home cost to construct? Nobody seems to know. So I jumped into my car the day after I got the Excel spreadsheet and drove 144 miles to this place called Madera, California. It's in the Central Valley in California. And so I go there and I'm like, you know, how much does it cost to build this home that's available for $90,000? I go find a contractor and he says, there's no way you can build these for less than $150,000. So like the all-in cost, if you wanted to build one, would be $150,000. So I'm like, but it's available for $90,000. And the answer is yes, only one reason. They're all empty, right? All of these, they're empty. And that's why they're undervalued. But the moment they're full, it has to be worth more than, you know, $150,000, probably worth $200,000. And I'm like, okay. So basically what you're saying to me is that this is just a tenant issue. And they're like, yeah, I mean, but it's a big issue. I mean, there's 6,000 of these brand new homes in one part of Madera and they're all empty. And I'm like, okay, all right. I think I can do something about that. So I go back to the Ukrainian hacker and I tell him, I need you to do research on figuring out every listing site in America that lists rentals. I want every single one of them. So he comes back the next day with a list of 30 sites. And I'm like, okay, now I want you to figure out hacks on these websites so that my listing, instead of one listing, I want to have 50 or 100 listings or 200 or 500, whatever is the maximum number that is possible. And I want you to figure out hacks. And he did. He figured out that in one place, if you put a semicolon, then you can list the same address twice. In one place, you can put in like apartment one, apartment two. So he figured out lots and lots and lots of hacks. And I'm just constantly paying him to do this. And so he eventually figures out how to give my properties huge visibility. Well, the problem was, and so I, you know, apply that to Madera properties. Nobody shows up. Why? Because nobody's looking in Madera. So complete and dismal and utter failure. So I'm like, there's got to be some way to do this. So 21 miles away from Madera is the bustling city of Fresno, much larger city, lots of jobs. And so I go and buy an old home in Fresno. And I apply my mega marketing, that's what I'd started calling it, all these hacks that we'd figured out to find tenants to this one property. And as you can imagine, we'd received a very, very large number of leads of people interested in renting that property. And so what I did was I hired my first virtual assistant in the Philippines. I now have 18 of them full-time and said to her, here's what I want you to tell these people. Hey, you know, you can rent this house if you like, but we also have these homes in Madera and they are, you know, 20 miles away. Would you like to go look at them? They're much nicer, much bigger, and they're $400 or $500 less. And when you pitch that to one person, the natural tendency is to say no, but when you pitch it to hundreds of people, there are always going to be some people that are fine with it. I even initially gave away $25 gas cards for people who would be willing to go and check those homes out. And as you can imagine, in a few weeks, all of those homes were rented. And I had astonishing cash flow. And I couldn't believe my luck. And then at that point, I made the biggest mistake of my life. I thought that you could only buy 10 because everybody was telling me you can only buy 10. I'd already bought 10. I'd already filled 10. So I stopped. And that was a huge mistake. Nobody told me about portfolio loans, which allow you to take 10 of them, wrap them up into a single loan, and now you have 9 loans remaining. I didn't find out about those until 5 years ago, because otherwise I would have bought up half the city of Madera. As you can imagine, those homes are now worth over $250,000 each. I think I paid $90,000 a pop for them, but they've also cash flowed beautifully for more than 10 years. So I think it really all comes down to the use of data science and technology. And so what I did was when I opened my own company in real estate many years later, long time later, because you know I had this tech job and we had a technology exit and we didn't exit until 2013. So I didn't really get into real estate full time until that time. But I said, what I was able to do personally resulted in a huge increase in my net worth. Could I do this? Could I apply technology, disruption, virtual assistants, hacks, coding, automation to commercial real estate, to multifamily real estate? Can I do it at scale? And the answer turned out to be, number one, no one had done that yet, so there were no how-to guides, so I had to invent it as I went along. Number two, it was far more profitable, and I'll give you examples of those if you want, far more profitable to do that for multifamily than it was for single family. So then, since then, I've never bought a single family. So I'm up to about 2,000 units, 500 investors, getting close to $300 million in my portfolio. Half of that is existing properties that we buy and improve, and the other half is property land that we buy and we build on. So good for me, good for investors, all about the power of technology, data, numbers.
Okay. Well, given the name of the podcast, Scalable Real Estate Investing, why don't we just go into how you identified how much more scalable multifamily was? I mean, it's maybe a little obvious, but why don't you just provide some examples like you said?
Yeah, well, I'm going to give you some disruptive examples that you haven't heard of, right? So you've heard that some multifamily properties have video cameras, right? So security cameras. So I bought a property for $17.5 million and it had video cameras, and they were all pointing to the parking lots to deter crime. And I talked to my partners and I, you know, convinced them that instead of pointing the video cameras to the parking lots, we should turn them 30 degrees. So they were looking at the gantry, the walkways between apartments, you know, so you kind of walk up a staircase and you've got this long walkway and you walk all the way to your door. And they're like, what is this going to do, Neil? I mean, this is not going to solve anything. I said, please give me, I'm in my moniker in this area, I'm well known in the industry is the mad scientist in multifamily, because I've got a mad experiment running every day. So this was a mad experiment. So I was like, this is going to work, but hold on, you know, just let me do what I want. So, you know, we paid $500 to move the cameras. And so then I hired one of my Filipino people. Well, I didn't hire her. She was already there. So I assigned her this task. I said, okay, there's this DVR that's recording motion capture for all these people. So it only records when people are walking. And so what I want you to do is I want you to just sit there all day watching the videos of these people come into the apartment complex. These are all tenants. And as you watch the video, if you see a dog or a cat, then I want you to focus on that video. If you don't see a dog or a cat, then just ignore the video, right? And you can go through a lot of video because it's little motion capture snippets. So you can go through a lot of them very quickly. She's going through that. And I tell her, okay, so if there's a dog or a cat in there, I want you to then use various cameras to follow this person to their door. So they go up the walkway, they go this way, or they come back that way. And watch them go to their door. And when they're at their door, and you know what door that is, because I've also given you a 2D map of the property, two-dimensional map, so you can say, okay, this person's on in you know, apartment 113. When they get to that door, I want you to pause the video. Now you know which apartment they live in, right? And I want you to go into the property management software and see if there is a pet registered for that apartment. If there is a pet registered, ignore the video. If there's no pet registered, go back to the video and take a screenshot of the person with the pet. And then send that screenshot to the property manager and let them know that 113 has a pet. Okay? Now, this may seem like a very small thing, but I'm about to tell you how profitable it was, and it's going to absolutely blow your mind. So far, we've spent $500 moving the cameras. And we've spent roughly $500 on, you know, this person in the Philippines at $5 an hour watching a bunch of videos. So our total expense is $1,000. And she does this for several months for the whole property. We find 30 people living at the property not paying pet fees. The property's pet fees are $30 a month. So now, all 30 of those within a month of doing this have started paying pet rent because they've been caught and we have a picture of them, right? So, you know, we call them to the rental office and we say, hey, clearly you have a pet. We're going to be nice to you and not charge you rent for the all the way back to when you rented this property, but we're going to start from this month onwards. And they're like, oh, thank you, you know, for being nice to me. Sorry about that. I forgot to tell you I had a pet. So now 30 tenants, we're making $900 a month, which becomes $11,000 a year. You might say, well, $11,000 a year, not a big deal. Yes, but we have the property for 5 years. So that becomes $55,000, right? And then there is a one-time fee that has to be paid, which is $300, one-time fee. $300 multiplied by 30 pets is another $9,000. So we've got the $55,000 a year, right? Which is a, you know, pretty, well, not $55,000 a year, but $55,000 over 5 years. But here's the beauty of multifamily. Remember that $11,000 a year that we're making as new income? When we sell the property at a very common price of 6 cap, the buyer will give us $15 for every new dollar of profit we've created. And by doing this thing that I just described, we've created $11,000 a year of profit. So the buyer will give us 11,000 multiplied by 15, which is $165,000 when we sell this building, pretty much guaranteed. This happens in 99% of the cases, but you've never heard of anybody following tenants using, you know, high definition cameras. That's what we do. Those are the kinds of things, experiments that are running around our, you know, mad scientist lab every single day. So we made 165K on exit. We made 55K in cash flow. Put that together, we made $220,000 after spending a little under $1,000. That's a 220X return on investment. And that is scale. None of that works for a single family. None of that works for a quadplex. It only really works because we had 250 tenants to go through. That's why scale matters.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And
I'll give you one more example, right? This one was even easier. So lots of our properties have parking spaces, and these spaces have to be rented out, right? So some of the places the parking spaces are free, other places you're renting out the parking space, especially if you're kind of close to downtown. And the tenants are used to paying for it. But lots of our properties, these parking spaces were not getting rented out. Some were rented, some were not, but we'd never get to the point where like 100% of parking spaces were rented. So we were sort of mystified by it. So we went and talked to our property manager and said, you know, what do you guys do to rent these? And they're like, look, I mean, let me be blunt. It's $30 a month. I make 3% of gross, which means I make 90 cents when this parking space is rented. So obviously I'm not going to make a bunch of phone calls to rent these spaces. When anybody comes into the property and comes into the leasing office, we mention it to them and that's about it. That's all we can do. We're not going to do more. So, okay, that's fair. You guys are only making 90 cents. So obviously you're not very motivated to do anything about it. But I'm not making 90 cents. I'm the owner. And every time a parking lot gets rented out, I don't look at it as $30 a month. I look at it as 30 multiplied by 60, which is 60 months, because I'm holding the property for 5 years. So I'm looking at it as $1,800. Plus, remember, for that $30, I'm also going to get a 15X multiplier when I sell. So that's a big deal for me. So for me, the numbers are 100 times bigger than the property manager. So doesn't it make sense for me to do something about it? Most people would be like, no, that's the property manager's job. Like 99.99% of the people you talk to are, this is the property manager's job. Yes, but what if no property manager has ever done this job? Or is it still their job? Isn't that only a theoretical conversation? Nobody's ever picked up a phone call and tried to sell a parking lot, right? Or parking space. So bottom line is, if they don't actually ever do it and you know they're never going to do it, why shouldn't you take it over? In the end, it's profit for your investors. So that's what we did. So we started making phone calls and they didn't go really well. We started calling tenants and we had their phone numbers. So we had a person in the Philippines make phone calls. Didn't go well, dismal failure. So we were like, so why do people rent parking spots? And after a little bit of research and a little bit of web Googling, we realized that people only rent parking spots when it's very hot or very cold, because that's when the discomfort happens. And that's when people are like, let me just pay the damn $30 and get a covered parking spot. I don't want the sun to be beating down my car, or I don't want there to be 2 feet of snow on top of my car. So guess what we did? We assigned a person in the Philippines who's, you know, an employee that does lots of different things. And we said, whenever the temperature at this property is over 100 degrees, or it's been snowing and there's more than 12 inches of snow, please call the property and sell parking spots. every single parking spot was sold out, right? The property had about 40 parking spots, this example property. 40 parking spots, $30, $1,200 a month, $15,000 a year, $75,000 over 5 years of cash flow, and $15,000 a year multiplied by 15. Remember, you get the 15 multiple when you sell, $225,000. So 75 grand in cash flow, $225,000 on exit, $300,000 of profit for roughly, it was about 120 hours of work. So $600. Spend $600, make 300 grand, 500x multiple. That is scale, and that is the use of disruptive technology.
Okay. Yeah, those are both great examples and definitely exponential returns. So very exciting. I was listening to a different discussion you were saying in terms of just looking at major MSAs and saying, well, these are way overpriced and looking at maybe a secondary market nearby. So I'm just curious what some of the metrics you look at just to also kind of gauge supply and demand before you just fully invest in that market.
Well, initially, when I look at markets in the US, I'm looking at five indicators. They're all demographic indicators. And I've written a course about this. It's actually a video course. It's on Udemy. There's about 6,000 people taking the course. It's actually the highest ranked real estate course on Udemy. So if you want to check that out, you know, just Google Udemy space Neil Bawa and you'll see about 500 reviews on this course. The course focuses on five demographic indicators when you're picking cities and five when you're picking neighborhoods. And those demographic indicators by themselves are very common sense. The magic, the secret sauce is in how much growth you're looking for. So how much crime reduction matters, how much population growth matters, how much income growth matters, how much job growth matters, and how much home price growth matters. And more is not always better. For example, when it comes to income, or home, you know, basically median household income, you'll notice that we give you a Goldilocks zone. We give you a range. And you might be like, why would I not want to buy above this range? I mean, if people are richer in the area, why would I not want to invest? And the answer is you can, but you can get investors to give you money because beyond $70,000 in average median household income, the area's prices go up so much that rents don't stay up with that, right? So as a result, you're going to end up having low or negative cash flow, even though it's probably a pretty good investment. But most investors are not that patient. So they're, you know, you might have to let that investment go if you're using other people's money, right? So we give you these exact numbers of how much population growth is acceptable. What is your targeted population growth for a city? What is your targeted population growth for a neighborhood? We also look at other numbers like poverty levels. We find that anything above 20% in a neighborhood with poverty level creates two very big unsolvable problems. Number one, you're going to have a lot of delinquency. Your legal costs will be crazy. You'll have lots of non-paying tenants. You'll have, you know, eviction costs, all kinds of hassle. Second, you'll have high churn. People will come and leave within a year or less. They'll just hand in the keys and say, I'm sorry, I lost my job and I have no money and here's a key. You can sue me if you like. So now your average stay time is less than a year, where in good properties, your average stay time is 2.5 years. There's no way to solve either one of these two problems, except that if the poverty level is above 20%, don't invest in that neighborhood. Just go find a neighborhood a mile away or 2 miles away, because there's plenty of neighborhoods with poverty levels below 20% or 15%. So this is just a little teaser of the course. The course is about 2.5 hours long, and it goes into, okay, what matters, how exactly to measure it in 5 minutes, and then how to take that measurement and say, this is what I want to do, right? I want to invest in this city. I want to invest in this neighborhood. How do you do that? So we packaged it all together, plugged an Excel spreadsheet that gives you a result in 5 to 10 minutes. It's not a black box. You can see exactly what the Excel spreadsheet is doing. So we're not trying to sell you an Excel spreadsheet or a subscription. All of this stuff is free because I've always believed in the Google and the Wikipedia model. You've got to give a lot away for free. I admire Google for giving more away for free. I mean, by comparison, Apple gives you nothing, nothing, right? But Google gives you a lot. And yes, there's privacy concerns and other issues that I want to get into that. But I think that fundamentally, Google gives you a lot of value. That's true. Wikipedia gives you phenomenal amounts of value. And I wanted to create something like that. So I created this course. And now in a given year, 20, 30,000 real estate investors take it and they benefit from it. And I don't have their email addresses. So, you know, I only know about them if they come and contact me. But I think that the value is there. And a number of them realize that what this geek is doing, it resonates with them because they're geeks themselves. They're numbers driven, they're data driven. So they come back and invest with me. That's how I got to 500 investors and, you know, $250 million portfolio.
Okay. Yeah, that's actually interesting. A different funnel that maybe a lot of people haven't really considered of having a Udemy course. Obviously, there's podcasts. Well,
there's so many people with podcasts that I don't think I want to be a podcaster anymore. There's so many people that have written books. I don't think I want to write books anymore. I wanted to just do something different. It's in my DNA to do things differently.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, if everyone's going left, why not go right? If it makes sense. So,
well, measure to see that right is going in the right direction, then make a right. And don't necessarily listen to other people. Imagine what would have happened if I'd listened to my family in 2008. They were telling me I was the greatest idiot of all time. And then 2 years later, we're all begging to buy properties in the same city. And it was too late.
Yeah, exactly. One thing I noticed on your website, you're big on opportunity zones. So could you go into that a little bit more? I'm familiar with them, but maybe certain listeners are not. So why are they a great investment and where are they typically located? How do you differentiate between a good and a bad one?
Well, let me start off by saying I don't believe that they're a good investment for the most part. Opportunity zones comprise of 12% of the land mass of the United States. About 12% of the US is an opportunity zone. There's about 8,750 zones. And they're in every state, they're in every city. You can't imagine a big state or a city that doesn't have them. And typically they're designated that way because they're distressed in some way. They're underperforming, they're distressed, they're horribly distressed, they're war zones. So they come in lots of different flavors. Some of the ones that are underperforming are in high performance areas. So they're still awesome, but they're still performing less than the areas around them, right? Unfortunately, those are very rare. So, you know, we did a lot of research by looking at the census.gov website, and we downloaded all 8,751 census tracts. And we found that only 300 of them were investment grade. That's only 3.5%. And we were seeing people building huge, everything from apartment complexes to mixed use projects to hotels to, oh my God, I mean, entire communities in these horrible places with low income, high levels of poverty, you know, basically high levels of unemployment. So the honest answer is opportunity zones generally are a great way to lose money because investors are attracted by the fact that the tax benefits of opportunity zones are rather mind-boggling. So they just look at those tax benefits and they immediately assume that those benefits are going to occur and they make their investment. So people want to invest in those. Just huge tax benefits, incredible. And those benefits are wider in scope than, let's say, 1031 benefits, which have huge numbers of restrictions where opportunity zones can be money you can make by selling property, you can sell a business, you can sell stock, and you can basically not pay taxes on any of those. So people, it looks phenomenal, but it looks too good to be true. It probably is too good to be true. The catch is to figure out those 3%, or maybe I'd say 5% of opportunity zones in the United States, where you're having your cake and eating it too, in the sense that it's a truly up and coming area. It's truly gentrifying. It's truly going in the right direction, and you're getting all the tax benefits, right? Because what good are tax benefits if your investment loses money? Right? There is no tax benefit for a money losing investment. It's only hypothetical. So the truth is, I believe that fundamentally opportunity zones are the best real estate / taxation incentive offered since the 1980s. Only if you're willing to do the research and figure out which zones are better than others. And if you're not willing to do that, please, for God's sake, don't even think of investing a penny of your hard-earned money into opportunity zones because you're going to lose it.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, huh? I have to go back to the drawing board for that one and cancel all of my potential investments. No, just joking. But that's very interesting. So in terms of just underwriting deals, since you are so data-driven, could you go into a little bit more detail about, like, once you identify a deal, say in an opportunity zone, what are some other metrics you look at to really determine this is worth investing in?
I don't think my underwriting metrics are any different from anyone else's. I think that what is different about us, A, is figuring out which cities and neighborhoods to invest in. So that's pre-underwriting. Once we underwrite, I think I'd be underwrite like most other decent syndicators. We're not doing anything unusual. But then where we change dramatically is in asset management. From using high-definition video cameras to using people, you know, calling about parking lots, to having an army in the Philippines that generates 30,000 tenant leads a year and schedules 2,000 people at our properties. That's where the difference is. I feel like I'm at a disadvantage when Mason asks me about underwriting because I have nothing good to say except to say, I think I underwrite like every other reasonable person. I make reasonable assumptions. Like right now, I'm underwriting for negative rent growth. This year, negative rent growth. Next year, flat rent growth. Maybe the year after that, maybe some rent growth. So the people that are underwriting positive rent growth in the middle of a raging pandemic are insane and unfortunately very frequent. So that means that I probably will not end up buying anything until Q4 this year because people will overbid and I won't even get into best and final. But apart from that, there's nothing special about my underwriting at all.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I know that a lot of people will typically use kind of underwrite based on typical terms, 8% pref. And
yeah, I think we're doing a lot of the same things. But what I'm finding is that there isn't enough rigor put into it. There isn't enough, you know, there is one thing that we do in underwriting that we're kind of proud of. So I'll mention that. So what I find is that, in, you know, as a general partner in a deal that's 20 or 30 million bucks, I stand to make $1 million if I do the deal, theoretically. And I stand to lose that $1 million, theoretically, if I don't do the deal. So there's always the temptation to push the boundaries a little bit. And I found that no matter how data-driven you are, the greed sort of takes over and you make the wrong decisions. And I certainly have done that in the past. So one of the things that we decided to do a while back is we started to hire underwriters that are not our employees. They're Fannie and Freddie underwriters. You know, they do underwriting all day for Fannie and Freddie, and then they moonlight for us in the evenings. And we give them money, and we specifically tell them that don't try to make a deal work. It's not your job. Your job is just to underwrite it as it is, good or bad. Just underwrite the sucker. We've even considered giving them a $50 bonus for every deal where they say no, but no bonuses for any deal that they say yes, which means that they truly have to believe in the deal to forego their $50. Right? Haven't done that yet, but it's an idea. Right? Just so that they know that their true job is to say no, 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 yes. Right? So a lot of no's have to come before that one yes happens. So, but because they know they can't say no forever, because then we'll end up buying nobody and they won't have a job. Right? But they get compensated for saying no a little bit more than for saying yes. By doing that, we take the emotion out of it. We take the falling in love, you know, over a property, which happens so often, we take that out of it. Because if the underwriter's like, no, let's not buy this, then, you know, we're not going to buy it. And I think that too few people do that.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was Tom's Shoes that will pay, or at least previously, they would pay someone if they didn't take the job because they want to just make sure the employee was committed to the company. So it's a similar concept, but it's a great idea. Yeah. All right. Before we go, I know you have a hard stop coming up, but one thing I thought was really interesting was in your multifamily U boot camp, I heard you are teaching these ringless voicemail campaigns and also text message drip campaigns. So maybe you could discuss that a little bit and also any other scalable marketing techniques that you found have a higher yield than other conventional marketing strategies.
Well, that's not something I can do in 4 minutes, so I'll just stick with the ringless voicemails. I find that I get a lot of attention from investors when they're signing up for my investment webinars. I don't do ringless voicemails when I'm doing just a regular webinar on COVID or something else. But when I'm doing investment webinars, I take the top 20% of my database, about 4,000 investors that actively are looking at all of my deals, and I send them a voicemail that is about a minute long that, you know, I record. So it's an MP3 file that I record on my phone. I send it to my staff. And on Saturday, it's always done on a Saturday. We sit down at about 11 o'clock. I start watching Netflix, and then they blast it. And the way ringless voicemails work is that they don't ring. They go straight to voicemail on the other side. They do show as a missed call. So for about 4,000 ringless voicemails, I get about 30 or 40 people calling me back and saying, hey, I just saw a missed call. And I explained to them, hey, my team just left you a ringless voicemail letting you know about our upcoming project. It's in your voicemail. Please listen to it. If they have questions, I answer it to them. So that happens about 30 or 40 times in the next 3 hours. You know, those calls are only about a minute long, so I still manage to watch at least 2 Netflix movies.
Okay.
And I get an incredible return on investment from them. Because there's people who just don't read their email anymore, and then they come back and complain to us that they didn't get into our projects. But this way, they can't say that. I sent you a text message. I sent you a ringless voicemail. I sent you 2 emails. If you're ready, jump in.
It's like collecting rent from tenants. Just hit them from all different angles and have a record of it. Makes a lot of sense. All right. Mm-hmm. So I think this has all been really helpful. Just to summarize, I think it was really interesting how you first started with the single family houses and learned about portfolio loans. And I'm definitely going to put a link to your Udemy course in the notes for this episode so everyone can
access that. Yeah, udemy.com/realfocus.
Yeah, I'm definitely eager to learn about your approach and those 5 metrics, and also going to steer clear from the opportunity zones. And
don't steer clear. Just do your homework. It's not really hard. There's a website called investreal.com, investreal.com. You can see the ranking of opportunity zones there. So if it's a highly ranked opportunity zone and you're getting an opportunity to invest there, look at it. I mean, remember, it's an incredible benefit. But the government doesn't, you don't get anything for free. The government knows that out of 10 projects, 6 or 7 are going to suffer. But 10 projects will still get built, and the government will still get the benefit of those 10 projects, and only really end up paying the tax benefits for the other 3 or 2. And you want to make sure you're in that 2 or 3.
All right, definitely. With that, if someone wants to connect with you more or learn more about what you're doing, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
We have we own Multifamily University, so it's multifamilyu.com. That's the URL, multifamilyu.com. We do webinars. We do 1 a week. We have roughly 1,500 people that sign up for these webinars, and about 500 attend them. If there are more than 500, I don't know about them because our Zoom license is only for 500, so we always max it out. We do send out the replay, so about 1,000 people watch the replays for each of these. And we do them once a week, and they're all deep dive. They're all data-driven. We invite people that are data-driven. We invite people that have true secrets to share, people that are unafraid of sharing high-quality content. And they're fairly long. They're about an hour, 15 minutes. We've done 6 of these for the impact of COVID on real estate, different areas, in multifamily, industrial, those sorts of things. And we've had 10,000 registrations for just those 6 town halls. So come in, learn, it's free. It's a pitch-free environment. We do not allow people to have run through PowerPoint decks that are 30 minutes pitching a product. They have a product, they can pitch it for a minute. I do some of them. My partner, Anna Myers, who is a phenomenal underwriter, she does some that are deep dives on underwriting. Come in, take the content, it's free.
All right, perfect. I'll be sure to put that link as well in the episode description.
Please.
So again, thank you for your time, and hope to do it again soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on the show, Mason.
No problem. It was my pleasure.